most loving pranams at Bhagwan's Lotus Feet. Dear listeners, I welcome you to this week's episode of the Gita series, A Triune Pilgrimage. This is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, and it gives me great pleasure to join you again on this journey of going through the Bhagavad Gita verse by verse. We are in the last part of the 10th chapter, the portion where Krishna mentions many, many examples of entities, of phenomena, where you can recognize the presence of divinity, what we call vibhutis, or the reflected glory of the Lord. And as we've seen, many, many examples, some of them from the Puranas, some of them from the epics, the Vedas. You have some, we also had some examples from literature and grammar, and so the variety is so expansive. So some of you have said that it's very interesting. You get to hear a lot of these Puranic stories. But of course, these are also examples from which there's nothing much I can explain. And that also is the reason why we went a bit fast in the past couple of weeks. We covered five verses last time, verses 29 to 33. In fact, the last portion of 33 is still left. I will complete that before I go to the next shloka. But those were the shlokas that we are covering, and many examples, and even in this week's episode, we will find few more examples that we will cover. We will shortly, we'll quickly go through what we did last time, so that it gives us also refresh our memory about what we covered, and also gives us the context of the various examples that Krishna is giving. In the 29th verse, with which we started last time, Krishna said, Anantah cha asmi naganam. Among the Nagas, I am Ananta. Of all the Sarpas, I am Vasuki, Krishna had said in the previous shloka itself. But among the Nagas, which is either a subsect of the Sarpas or it is another group very similar to Sarpas, as I was saying, that the judgment is still out on that, there is no conclusion. But among the Nagas, he says, I am Ananta. Ananta is another name for Seshanaga, the snake on which Lord Vishnu reclines. Adisesha, the other name for him, is the one who incarnates as the great devotee Lakshmana, and later in the Dwapara as Balarama, the elder brother of Lord Krishna. Then Krishna says in the same verse, Varunaha Yadasam Aham. Yadasas are deities of water bodies, like you have Mother Ganga representing the Ganges, you have Mother Godavari or Mother Yamuna for the various rivers. So each water body, be it a lake or a pond or the ocean or a sea, has a deity associated with that water body. And he says, among Yadasas, such water deities, he says, I am Varuna. Varuna is supposed to be the god of water itself. So he says, among the deities that represent water bodies, I am Varuna. Then he says, among Pitrus or ancestors, Aryama Asmi. I am Aryaman. Aryaman is a character mentioned in the Puranas. He is supposed to be the king of the Pitruloka. Pitruloka is the realm where the ancestors go to, especially those that have led a dharmic life and they have punya that they can go and enjoy, but they have not done such action which will enable them to go to the next spiritual phase, right? That is one of the descriptions it is given for the Pitruloka. So he says, among the Pitrus, I am the king of Pitrus, Aryaman. And finally in that shloka he says, Cha asmi yamaha samyamata maham. Among those who play this role of maintaining order, samyama means discipline or curbing, right? So samyamatam means those that govern or those that discipline or maintain order. He says, among such individuals, I am Yama. Yama is also called Dharma Raja, the one who enforces the rule of Dharma. So he says, among those that govern and rule, I am Yama. In the 30th verse, Krishna says, Prahladaha cha asmi daityanam. And among the demons, daityas, I am Prahallada. We spoke of the origin of the word daitya. The children of Diti, the children of Aditi, Mother Aditi are called Adityas. The children of Mother Diti are called Daityas. And Daityas are generally spoken of being inimical to the Devas, right? They are spoken of as demons and asuras, and among them, the quality that is spoken of as that which represents the Daityas are, they're very disciplined in a certain sense. They are capable of doing enormous amounts of tapas, but always this rajasic feeling that I have earned what I have got, or wherever I am, I have reached this state because of my own effort. So Prahlada comes as an example which is completely opposite to that, where he says, my Lord is everything, and my Lord is my power, my Lord is my source of inspiration and security. And that Prahlada challenges the rajasic nature of the entire Asura clan. So that's why Krishna says, among the Daityas, I am Prahlada. Then Krishna states, Kalah Kalayatam Aham. Kalayati means to count. So Kalayataha means the one who keeps count. It could be an accountant, it could be a simple ledger, or your Excel software, or whatever different kind of softwares, accounting softwares that you have. All of them probably will come into this category of Kalayataha. Of all those who keep count, he says, I am that which keeps that eternal count. I am Kalaha. Time will again be mentioned again later, but in a different context. We'll come to that shortly. But he says, among those that keep count, I am Kala, I am time itself. Then Krishna says, Mriganam Mrigendraha. Among the beasts, Mrigaha means beast. He says, I am Mrigendraha, lion. Mrigendraha actually means king of beasts, which is also a name used for the lion. But the idea is, in the forest, the leader or the most feared mriga or beast is Mrigendra. It could be a lion, it could be a tiger in some forests. So whatever is that beast or animal which is considered as being the most important or most feared, know me to be that. The final statement Krishna makes in that verse is, Vainateyascha Pakshinam. Among the birds, I am Vainateya or Garuda. Again, Garuda is also spoken of as being the king of birds. So Krishna is making a reference to Garuda in this verse. In the 31st verse, he starts by saying, Pavanaha Pavatam Asmi. We spoke of how Pavanaha or air has this tendency to clear or freshen up a place, you know, a dingy place. What do? You open the windows and you say, let fresh air come in. Because air has this ability to clear or clean things. Even the concept of pranayama is also the same. Just by taking deep breath, you can simply clear your mind. So among the many cleansing agents, pavatam means that which can purify, he says, pavanaha asmi, I am air. Then he states, Ramaha Shastrabhritam Aham. Among the wielders of weapons or warriors that carry weapons, I am Rama. Even though Krishna himself is a warrior, he also wields weapons. He also uses a bow. He also uses the Sudarshana Chakra. He says, but among warriors wielding weapons, I am Lord Rama. Because Rama was known to practice enormous amounts of restraint. That's why it is often said, I am one who uses only one arrow, right? So the idea is, he who picks up the weapon only for the protection of dharma, not for any selfish purpose, and only when it is most essential, right? That is why Rama is spoken of even as the ideal enemy. Krishna too did the same, right? It is not that Krishna ever used his weapons for selfish purposes, or Krishna used his Sudarshana to stamp his authority. That is not the case. But not necessarily Krishna did whatever he did for dharmic purposes in an obvious way. He left more scope for moral debates, is probably a way I could put it, right? So when Rama was not only dharmic, but he also ensured that the dharma was displayed so that he could be looked up as an example. And that's why Krishna is mentioning Rama as the one among wielders of weapons. Then Krishna says, Jashanam among fishes, Makaras Chasmi. I am Makara or Shark among fishes or aquatic animals. Then he says, Strotasam Asmi Jahnavi. Strotasam means among flowing waters, Srotasam. Could be rivers, it could be a stream. Jahnavi is a beautiful name for Mother Ganga. And Ganga, as we know, is not an earthly river. It's a celestial river brought down by the prayers of sage Bhagiratha and by the grace of Lord Shiva. So he says, Srotasam Asmi Jahnavi. The 32nd shloka has a few interesting points we discussed in detail. The first thing that Krishna says is, Sarganam among creations, Adirantascha Madhyam Chaivaham Arjuna. I am the beginning and the end and also the middle. Here Krishna is referring to anything that is created. He already spoke about Bhutaha, right? When he spoke about I am the indweller in all beings. There he mentioned that I am the beginning, middle and the end of all beings. But here he is talking about Sarganam, among those created beings, created things. It could be the entire cosmic creation or even a small project or a work or a task that you take up. So when he says, I am the beginning, middle and the end, Krishna suggests or means or conveys that I am the sankalpa that precedes the activity. I am the energy that enables the karma to complete the activity, and I am the result that you receive at the end of it too. That is what is being conveyed in this statement. Then Krishna says, Adhyatma Vidya Vidyanam. A statement which is very profound. We've heard Swami use this in his discourses any number of times. We discussed this too, that when we talk about Vidya or any form of learning, any Vidya that is related to a certain field, it could be related to music, it could be related to a certain concepts in mathematics, or it could be a certain science. That vidya related to a certain field can remove ajnana, only that ajnana which is related to that field. By learning music, I remove the ajnana of music. By learning arithmetic, I am removing the ajnana of arithmetic. But adhyatma vidya or atma vidya, the knowledge of the self, is that vidya learning which all ajnana can be removed, right? That is why Krishna says, Adhyatma Vidya Vidyanam. The last point Krishna makes in the shloka is, Vadaha Pravadata Maham. We discuss the different types of discussions and conversations that Vedanta speaks about. There is Samvada, Vada, Jalpa, Vidanda. Right? These are the primary four types. And Vada is spoken of as the most beneficial form of discussion, where the people who are discussing come to the table with an open mind, with a desire to learn and not to put down each other or not to defend their philosophy or idiosyncrasies. So that is why Vada is supposed to be considered the best form of debate or conversation. So Krishna says, Vadaha Pravadatam Aham. Pravadata means the different kinds of conversations, and in that I am Vadaha. In the 33rd verse he says, Aksharanam, among the letters or alphabets, Akaraha Asmi. The letter A, the first alphabet of most languages, and I'm saying most because I don't know all languages, and I'm saying most probably all languages should be starting with Akaraha or some form of, you know, in English we say A, the A, A. It starts with that akaraha or the short a. But when you look at it, it is the first sound that comes when you simply open your mouth. So it is the foundation of all spoken language. So he says, of all the alphabets, I am a. Then Krishna says, Dvandvaha samasikasyacha. Samasas are compound words or conjugate words, where we saw many examples of, even in English, you have the armchair or the wheelchair, things like that. So those are called samasas in Sanskrit. There are four basic types of samasas: dvandva, tatpurusha, bahuvrihi, and avyavibhava. And like how many compound words go, the compound words could either be an adjective, an adverb, or so on and so forth, where one word is given importance or the compound word themselves is not important. They point out to the third word, which is the actual subject. But among these different types of compound words, the dvandva samasa is where both words that are coming together are equally important, right? So dvandva is a compound where both words have equal relevance and importance. They are like coming together of equals. And the best examples that we saw were Radha, Krishna, Sita, Rama. These are all dvandva samasas where both names or both words are equally important. So Krishna is saying, I am that compound or samasa in which both are equally important. So those were the portions that we covered last time. As I said, 33rd verse I did not complete. I will complete that now. Krishna says, Aham eva, I am verily akshaya kalaha, the inexhaustible time. A beautiful and profound statement again. When we say time, it could be a period of time associated with something. We could say evening time, or like we say now, these are challenging times, or it is my lunchtime, or it could be a measure, right? A second, a minute, an hour, or a day, a week, or a month, or a year, or a decade. These are measures of time. There's time associated with certain events. There are measures of time. Or we see in Bharatiya tradition, there is a very, very minute breaking of time. A muhurtam is 48 minutes. Two ghatikas make a muhurta. 30 kalas make a ghatika. 30 kashtas make a ghatika. And so on and so forth, right? You have 1.6 seconds make a kashta. You have 18 nimeshas that make one kashta, which is like, again, a smaller measure of time. So you have measures of time which are large, like centuries and yugas and mahayugas, as we saw earlier in the Gita. And you also have small fractions of time. All these time associated with other factors and measures of time, they have a start and an end. When we say challenging times, we do believe that this challenging time is going to come to an end and we know when it started. But time itself is eternal. It is like a canvas on which the painting is done, isn't it? So Krishna makes a very beautiful and profound statement. He says, Aham eva akshayaha kalaha. When you speak of time, I am that constant, inexhaustible akshaya. That inexhaustible time that runs under all these bifurcations or segmentations that you do. Then Krishna says, Dhata aham vishvato mukaha. I am the dhata, the dispenser of fruits of actions of the whole world. The word dhata also means the creator. Vishvato mukaha, with faces everywhere. So one way of seeing this statement is, I am the creator, Brahma. Lord Brahma is often depicted as having four heads, right? Each head facing in the four directions. Meaning, he is the one who has eyes in all directions. The other way of looking at this statement is, along with the previous one that he makes, is, I am not limited to any period of time. This day or this year or even this very lifetime or this birth. I am that time which is a witness across all times. And I am Vishvato Mukha, one who sees every action with a, you could say, 360 degree view, right? I am not seeing only what you're doing in front of me. I have a comprehensive idea or I'm a comprehensive witness of whatever actions that you are performing, not just of what you're doing in front of me. And because I am a witness in such a manner, it is he who is the dispenser of destinies. When he is able to have that 360 degree view of all your actions, he becomes the most perfect and eligible dispenser of destinies. And the way he does it is perfect because he is Akshaya Kalaha, the eternal time, and Vishvato Mukhaha, and all-round witness. This is a very profound statement that Krishna is making for a very subtle reason. Krishna gave many examples of how to recognize his vibhuti, and most of these examples that we've been seeing so far are vibhutis that can be seen or witnessed every day, right? And that's the idea. These are things that you interact with every day, and these themselves can be recognized as being divine manifestations, right? That is the idea. But here in this statement, Krishna is mentioning a vibhuti that you acknowledge in the unseeable. In the absence of something that you can witness, you are acknowledging a vibhuti of the Lord. When we see good people going through a tough phase, or when you see not so good people flourishing endlessly, or when we feel that we have done nothing wrong and still we are going through these difficult times, and why am all these bad things happening to me when I have not hurt anyone, we calm ourselves by saying that it's all right, Swami is seeing everything, Swami knows. And Swami knows why he is putting a certain person through something, or why Swami is putting me through these difficult times, or why Swami is rewarding a person who, in my opinion, doesn't deserve it. We can't see the reason, but in the absence of reason, we are acknowledging the vibhuti of the Lord. I'm not saying absence of reason, in the absence of what we are not able to see, right? It is not available for me to perceive right away. The absence of what I can see, I am considering a vibhuti of the Lord. And that's why it is a very subtly different from whatever Krishna has mentioned so far. In the fact that I don't know why, I invoke Swami as being the all-knower. I don't know why I'm suffering. I don't know why I'm successful. I suddenly touch something and everything turns out to be beautiful and grand. I don't know how I'm having such success. So in the absence of anything that is pratyaksha, that is directly available to my perception, I attribute the Lord's vibhuti. Attributed to the Lord's vibhuti, right? That's why that's a very beautiful and profound and subtle statement that Krishna is making. So that is the 33rd verse that I started last time. I've completed now. Let us go to the next verse, the 34th verse of the 10th chapter. As always, we'll listen to it in Brother Shyam's voice, and then I'll give you a brief meaning of that. Then we'll discuss in detail.
Mrityusarvaharashchaham Udbhavascha bhavishyatam Kirti shrirvakcha narinam Smritir medha dhriti hikshama.
I am also death which snatches away all. I am the origin of all that shall be born. Among women, I am fame, prosperity, speech, memory, intelligence, endurance, and forgiveness. So that is the 34th verse of the 10th chapter. Krishna's examples continue. But in the process of giving these beautiful examples, some profound lessons are also being communicated. Maybe at the time when Krishna gave the discourse, some of what he is saying may have been taken for granted, but it is a good reminder for modern times, especially something that Krishna is mentioning in this shloka, but we'll come to that in good time. Firstly, what he says is, Mrityuhu sarvaharaha cha aham. Haraha means one who snatches away. Hara means to, you know, apaharan, we say in Hindi, to take away from somebody. So, haraha means one who snatches away. Suppose you have a loss in business. The loss snatches away your wealth. And when it does that, it also snatches away the years of effort that you've put in that direction. An accident can snatch away a portion of your life. say, if you lose a limb in an accident, it has snatched away a certain aspect of your life. Past few weeks, we've been airing an interview of Mrs. Satyavati Rao in our Telugu channel, the Sandeshijari YouTube channel. She's the wife of our former principal of the Prashanthi Nilayam campus, Professor U.S. Rao, who's the director of the campus or the principal of the campus when we were all students, person who has been associated with Swami's university for many, many years. Once when they were traveling from Puttaparthi to Whitefield to have Swami's darshan, those days whenever Swami would be in Vrindavan, the teachers in the campus had the opportunity, in the weekend they would book a matador or a car or something and they would go as a group with family, have Swami's darshan, and Swami would also be very, very delighted to see them, and they would come back and resume their duties in the university from the next day, from that Monday. So there was this group of staff who were going to have Swami's darshan in Whitefield, and when they were going, they met with a horrific accident, a very, very unfortunate accident that led to enormous amounts of injuries and I think even a few casualties too. And the reason I'm referring to that is Satyavati Madam was referring to and narrating how much Swami took care of them during that period. They were admitted in one of the hospitals, I think near to the site of the accident. Swami came all the way from Vrindavan to the hospital to see them, and Swami monitored the treatment that was given to them. Swami got food for them. Swami got coffee for them. And the amount of care that Swami was doing, he's the creator. Everything in his hand. He is the dhata, as we just saw. But then he allows life to take its own course too. He could have stopped. He could have avoided things like this. But Swami allows destiny to take its own course. But as Swami, as your master, as the Swami that we all love to and we pray to, we call him our mother and father. In that role, Swami was there beside them, taking care of them. And it's such a moving story. You should go and listen to it. It's, of course, in Telugu, but I'm sure you'll get a drift of it. And in fact, Satyavati Madam says, and she would often say that if I can get that much physical attention and love from Swami, I am prepared to go through any number of such accidents. That is how much Swami showered on them during that phase in that life. And that is the effect of Swami's love, right? It is not just, as Swami would himself say, morphine for our pain, but then it becomes so enticing that we start welcoming pain if we can get that kind of love from Swami. The reason why I was quoting that conversation is that in that accident, Professor U.S. Rao, our teacher, he lost actually a portion of his memory. The memory of about 2 or 3 weeks before that accident actually happened. So there are some cases where because of an accident, a portion of your memory is lost. There are examples where because of drug overdose, people lose some memory. So when an accident or such events happen, a portion of your life is actually snatched away from you. A sour relationship takes away a part of your life, isn't it? But death, when we speak of death, death is something that takes away everything. All that you have carefully gathered through your life is snatched away in that one moment. That's why we are constantly reminded that we have to leave everything at the time of death, because death takes away everything. Similarly, death takes away all memories too. It does not take away a portion of your memory. It takes away the memory of your entire lifetime. And in the next birth, when you're born with a fresh mind, with no memory of your past. So Krishna says, Mrityuhu sarvaharaha cha aham. Though he does not convey it exactly that way, among those that snatch away, I am death. I think that is what is implied in the statement that Krishna is making, that there are many incidents or events that can snatch away. Among such, I am Mrityuhu. Mrityu is sarvaharaha, that which snatches away all. Another interpretation of this statement is, as even mentioned by Adi Shankara in his commentary, is that it is a reference to the dissolution that happens at the end of time. because the next statement that says Udbhavaha cha bhavishyatam. Udbhavaha means coming into existence, or as a noun it means the source of all origin. Bhavishyatam, those that are yet to be. Bhavishya means the future, right? So bhavishyatam means those that are going to be in the future, or those that will be formed in the future. So seeing it along with the previous statement, it is similar to something that Krishna has mentioned earlier. At the time of dissolution, all beings come into me, and I am the source from where all that is going to be are going to come from too. A statement that we'll also be seeing mentioned in the next chapter of the Gita. But seeing the other explanation for the previous one that we just went through, Krishna describes death as the great snatcher, right? Udbhavaha also means becoming prosperous. We keep hearing the many stories of rags to riches, right? Someone started as being homeless or working in simple jobs, and then they see such unbelievable prosperity. There's no way to explain that and say that this is what this person did, and that is why it is so dangerous to read some of these success stories and make them your mantras to success. Because most often people have no idea why they've become successful. And after becoming successful, they look back and say that, I think I did these things. And we end up doing those things and try to look for the same success. That's a different story altogether. I'm just mentioning that in the lighter vein. But you have these stories of people suddenly becoming prosperous. Udbhavaha means that kind of prosperity. Udbhavaha means that which springs out, that which overflows. Udbhavaha cha bhavishyatam means I am the source of those that are going to be prosperous. I am the death that takes away everything. I am also that what makes what you may call destiny or luck or fortune or anything, any name that you give for it, that which hides in itself the fortune that is yet to be seen, right? Today you might be poor, today your business might be small and might be struggling. But if, let's say that destiny has it that 10 years down the line, you're going to be a huge corporation employing thousands of people, that prosperity is waiting to happen. And Krishna says, that prosperity of the future, Udbhavaha Bhavishyatam, that also is me, he says. This next statement that he makes in the shloka is a point that Swami would often quote in his discourses. That's why it's very important. He says, Narinam, among women or in women, I am the following. What are those? Kirtihi, Shrihi, Vak, Smritihi, Medha, Dhriti, Kshama. Krishna mentions seven qualities and says, I am all of these in women. Specifically, he says, he doesn't say these are the noble qualities in people and I am them. He says, in women, there are these seven noble qualities and these are my vibhutis. And in what context does Swami quote this shloka in his discourses? Swami would say, whenever he would speak of the glory of womanhood, that women have these seven shaktis or powers within them, latent within them. And they are not ordinary powers, they are divine, and that is why Krishna is mentioning them as his vibhutis. We often speak about empowering women, right? That's something that is always in vogue, especially in the present times. We have to empower women. We speak of empowering women because of these social inequalities that are there. And yes, those have to be fixed. And for that reason, this empowerment of women is very important. But in the name of being empowered, women should not give up these divine powers or move away from these divine powers, right? That's a very, very important thing. And that's why I said, in the process of mentioning vibhutis, Krishna is leaving some subtle messages and subtle lessons that are important for the modern times. When we say empower, it is about giving power from outside. You kind of enable somebody to become more powerful. As I was saying, that is only a social empowerment. True spiritual empowerment will be when we are able to highlight these powers and women are able to capitalize on these latent powers. And that will happen only when we recognize these as divine powers, right? Unfortunately, we don't. In fact, some of them, we even look at them as being weaknesses in people, right? That's the unfortunate thing of the modern world. That is why this statement that Krishna is making is so important. One, these are divine qualities. Two, these are natural to women. So a woman has to look at these as qualities that are already there within. These don't have to be acquired from outside. And these have to be fostered. So what are these qualities that Krishna is mentioning? Kirtihi, fame. And not any fame, not fame that comes in the modern context, you become a social media influencer, not that kind of a fame. Kirtihi means that fame that comes with dharma, a good name. Swami would say, Kirti Satyam Dvayam Sthiram. It is not any kind of fame, but fame that comes by a righteous moral living. That is very easily accessible for women. That's what Krishna says here. Kirtihi is one of the qualities latent. Then he says, Shrihi, prosperity. Where a woman is disciplined and noble, it is said that wealth will automatically come. And Shri not only stands for prosperity in the form of wealth, but it also means beauty, beauty of character, and also all the wealths that Swami would speak about. Swami would say there are 8 types of prosperities. Health, and health is a form of prosperity. Learning is a form of prosperity. So where a woman sticks to dharma, kirti comes automatically. Shri also comes automatically. Then he says vak, speech. Again, not any kind of speech, because speech is accessible to everyone. Even a child can speak. The vak that is mentioned here is the noblest form of speech. And noblest form of speech is said to have 3 attributes. Satya, Hita, and Priya. Satya, it is truthful. Hita, it is beneficial to others. It is good to others. And Priya, it is pleasant. As this is mentioned as feminine powers, it means that such speech, such vak is very natural to women, right? That's the point that has to be kept in mind. It is not that these have to be acquired. When Krishna says these are qualities inherent in women, it means that these can come naturally to women if you don't inhibit it, if you don't find ways of going contrary to it. This kind of vak, which is satya, hita, and priya, comes naturally to women. And then he says, smritihi, memory. It is always said that women have a better capacity to remember, better memory than men. And here is Krishna asserting that, right? Krishna is giving, clearly saying that women have more memory than men. So that is a quality that is mentioned. Medha, intelligence. You only have to see the pass percentage and averages of 12th standard and 10th standard exams in India. You will clearly understand why women are spoken of as being more intelligent than men. You will always see that the girls will be performing better in some of these national level exams where both men and women or boys and girls participate together. Right, that's a way. It's a really leveling field where you can see always the pass percentage among the girl students will be higher. And here is Krishna again validating that. He's saying medha, intelligence is an inherent shakti or power in women. And I think it is just a matter of observation. You can quite easily observe this. A girl or a woman of a certain age will always be wiser and more mature than a boy or a man of the same age. that is because of this quality of Medha, which is an inherent power in women. And then he says, Dhritihi, firmness or courage or endurance. Again, an admirable quality which Krishna says comes very naturally to women. And finally, Kshama. And Kshama, as I'm sure we must have discussed earlier in this program and in the many programs that we do on the radio, it is not simply forgiving another, right? Kshama is spoken of as a very potent and profound quality to have. It is a mix of patience, forgiveness, forbearance, and wisdom. And the most notable quality of motherhood is Kshama, isn't it? As we can see how some of these qualities I was mentioning in the modern societies, we have also come to speaking of them as being weaknesses. Forget about recognizing them as divine qualities. We don't look at them as powers at all. We don't look at them as advantages at all. We are now looking at them as being weaknesses. And when we do that, we tend to move away from these qualities, right? That is why this is a very important statement that Krishna is making. We as a society should recognize these as noble qualities. How each individual chooses to develop, that's a different point. That's up to each individual. But at least we as a society, we as individuals must start acknowledging these as noble qualities. And that is why Krishna is naming them as vibhutis of the Lord recognizable in women. So through these examples, Krishna is not only telling how we can contemplate on him, but it is also pointing out to those qualities that you must not overlook. Don't dismiss death as being bad and inauspicious. Don't dismiss Kshama and such qualities that we just saw as being unimportant or even worse, as being weaknesses. Before we move to the next shloka, one other Puranic dimension to this statement that Krishna is making. I think I'll just mention that. We spoke about Kashyapa Prajapati, sage Kashyapa, as being one of the progenitors or initial people who populated the creation. So they are called Prajapatis, right? Such people. Kashyapa is one Prajapati. Another very commonly mentioned Prajapati in the Puranas is Daksha Prajapati. And Daksha is spoken of as having five daughters who are often mentioned as being highly virtuous. And the five daughters are Kirti, Smriti, Medha, Dhriti, and Kshama. Shri was the daughter of sage Bhrigu, and Vak is spoken of as being one of the daughters of Lord Brahma. And as per their respective names, these seven women are mentioned as being presiding deities of the seven qualities that we just discussed. So that is also one way of looking at this statement. Just like how Krishna said, I am Varuna, I am Agni, I am this Deva, I am that. You can also say that Krishna is mentioning these deities and saying, I am all of these. But then still we have to look at these as qualities and go through them. So I'm just making a mention of that Puranic angle. It does not necessarily change anything that we just discussed. So that was one of the beautiful and profound points that Krishna makes, that among women, I am these qualities, these noble qualities. Maybe I'll just mention those qualities again before we are able to move forward. These qualities are Kirti, fame, Shri, prosperity, Vak, speech, noble speech, Smriti, memory, Medha, intelligence, Dhriti, firmness or courage, Kshama, forgiveness. So these are the qualities that Krishna mentions. We'll go to the next shloka, the 35th shloka. We'll listen to it and we'll discuss about that before we conclude for this week.
Brihat sama tatha samnam gayatri chanda samaham masanam margashir shoham rutunam kusumakaraha.
I am also the Brihat Sama of the Sama Mantras, of the meters Gayatri, of the months I am Margashirsha, and of the seasons Spring. So that is the 35th verse of the 10th chapter. Few more beautiful examples in this shloka. Krishna had already said that among the Vedas I am Sama, and one of the reasons being that it is musical, and we spoke of the importance of music in the tradition of bhakti. That could be one of the reasons why Krishna mentions that. And also the fact that the essence of Sama is the Pranava mantra. But here he mentions Tatha also Samnam. Among the Sama hymns, among the hymns that are to be found in the Sama Veda, he says, Brihat Sama. I am Brihat Sama. Brihat Sama is considered one of the sweetest and most melodious sounding hymns from the Sama Veda, and I believe it is generally chanted in the midnight. So again, a reference you and me may not be able to relate to much, but the message is the same. The most beautiful, the most exquisite, the most exalted in anything is to be seen as the Lord's Vibhuti, and this is one more example of that. Then Krishna says, Gayatri Chandasam Aham. Of all the Chandasa or meters, I am Gayatri. As we all know, all the Vedas and even a few other epics are all composed in a certain meter. They were for, you know, many centuries, if you look at all of these Vedas, they were never written down, right? They were always passed on by word of mouth, where the guru would chant it, and just by listening, you're supposed to listen to it. In fact, even when our students in Swami's hostels would learn, we would all have a Vedam book, of course, and listen. And as the teacher is chanting, we would read the book and then try to learn. But then we would also be told that, you know, if you're able to learn it this way, merely by listening, one thing is the learning will be faster, but somehow we never got a hang of that. But that is true. By listening, if you learn, the learning is faster. And generally, your learning capacity also increases if you use this method of learning the Vedas. So one of the best ways you can pass on something by word of mouth without writing them down, like the Vedas have been passed on for many, many centuries, is if you're able to consign them to some form of melody or rhythm. When I was in undergraduate, I had this classmate of mine who was not particularly good at academics. In fact, he used to struggle a lot. Of course, many of these students are now, by Swami's grace, in such extremely good positions and are looked up as experts in their field. The student is no exception for that. He's doing extremely well now. But when he was in Swami's college, when he was my classmate, he was somebody who used to struggle to remember some of these concepts and in generally struggle with academics. But interestingly, even though being a below average student, he would recall some of the things which we had not been able to remember. You know, for example, he could just recite out all the elements in the periodic table or some equations that we had studied way back in our school. This boy will be able to relate. So he would tell us that he had this very enterprising teacher who had made some of these things that had to be remembered into songs or rhythmic recitations. And that is how he, you know, the boy who was not able to remember what he studied the previous day will be able to remember these things which he studied years ago. Because not only was he able to, commit these to memory, but after so many years he was able to remember them. One of the reasons being, when you put something to rhythm, to meter, or to melody, it is so much more easier to remember. Maybe that is one of the reasons why the Vedic mantras are always in some form of meter or the other. And that meter is called chandas. And there are many such chandases. In fact, it is said that if you consider the whole of Vedas as being a divine being, a Veda Purusha, then the chandas is seen as the feet. It is the very foundation for this entire Veda Purusha. There are many such chandas: Gayatri, Ushnik, Anushtup, Brihati, Pankti, Trishtup, Jagati. There are so many actually. If you had noticed, even the Gita follows a certain meter, and that meter also keeps changing. There are some shlokas which are a little longer, and the meter will change in those shlokas, because there are as many as 6 different meters followed just in the Bhagavad Gita itself. If you look at some of the epics, for example, the Ramayana is written in one of the most common forms of chandas, which is Anushtup chandas. Even most of the shlokas in the Gita generally follow the Anushtup chandas, where a verse is broken up into 4 parts or 4 padas, and each pada will have 8 syllables, so adding up to 32 syllables. So a verse will be made of 32 syllables broken up into 4 padas. If I were to give you a very simple and example that you all may be aware of, Anushtup chandas shloka that is in that is and broken up into padas. Shuklam Baradharam Vishnum is one pada. Sashivarnam Chaturbhujam is one pada. Prasannavadanam Dhyayet is the 3rd pada. And Sarva Vignobha Shantayet is the 4th pada. And each of these padas have, as I said, 8 syllables. And this is a typical example of a Anushtup Chandas, very similar to most of the shlokas that we've seen in the Gita itself. Gayatri Chandas is considered the most divine of all these different meters, and no wonder Krishna is mentioning it here. The first verse of the Rig Veda starts in Gayatri meter. Swami would often say in his discourses, Gayatri Chandasam Matha. Gayatri meter is the mother of all other chandas or meters. And most of the important mantras for invoking various deities are composed in the Gayatri Chandas. You all must have heard the various Gayatris that are being chanted in the Kulwant Hall. There is a Gayatri for Ganesha, there is a Surya Gayatri, there is a Gayatri for Lord Subramanya. All of these are called Gayatris because they are in this Gayatri Chandas. In Gayatri Chandas, you have, unlike the Anushtup Chandas that I just discussed, you have only 3 padas, with each pada having 8 syllables. Again, something that Swami would often point out, the Gayatri mantra, right? It has come to represent the Gayatri Chandas itself. Om Bhur Bhuvasvah Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Dhiyo Yona Prachodayat. In this mantra, Om is the pranava invocation that is always added to any mantra. Bhur Bhuvasvah are called Vyakhritis. They are not essentially part of the Gayatri mantra itself. They are actually mystical utterances. Bhur Bhuvasvah. You will find such in many other mantras too. You know, Heem, Kleem, in that kind of many of these mystical utterances. They are called Vyakhritis. So Om, the pranava invocation, Bhur Bhuvasvah are Vyakhritis. The actual Gayatri mantra starts from the next line, and each line has 8 aksharas. Tat Savitur Varenyam is one pada, Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi is the 2nd pada, and Dhiyo Yona Prachodayat is the 3rd pada. And Swami would so beautifully in many of his discourses will explain, I'm not going into all of those detail. Tat Savitur Varenyam is a form of saying that I am bowing down to Savitur, the deity that the Gayatri Mantra praises is Savita or the creator, right? So Tat Savitur Varenyam is like mentioning the deity. Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi is prostrating, and Dhiyo Yona Prachodayat is the prayer, may you enlighten my intellect. So this was just to give an idea of what is the concept of chandas. When we talk about chandas in Vedas, along with meter, we also have the intonations or swaras, Udata, Anudata, Swarita, Dirgha Swarita, the various ups and downs which come, right? Gananam Tva Ganapati Gum Hava Mahe. You find that coming down, the going up, and then there is a double Dirgha Swarita, it is called, is going up, and Gananam Tva. There are these different intonations or swaras. So the Vedas are characterized by the chandas, the meter, as well as these swaras. But when you look at the epics, such as the Ramayana and Mahabharata, you will find that there are no intonations. These swaras are not necessarily there, but the chandas will still be there. So that is why chandas is literally the foundation of all Vedic and Puranic literature. And of the many, Krishna says, I am Gayatri. And most people believe it is because the king of all mantras, the Gayatri mantra, is composed in this chandas. Krishna is saying that I am this chandas, right? In fact, Gayatri mantra is named so because it is in this chandas. But Krishna is mentioning this chandas because of the Gayatri mantra, is the belief that many saints and commentators put forth. Swami would say in his discourses, Gayantam Thrayati Iti Gayatri. Gayatri is that which redeems the chanter of all mantras, right? Just like when you take names, when you say Rama, when you say Krishna, these are actually names that were there even before Lord Rama and Lord Krishna came. In fact, Krishna literally means the dark one. Draupadi was called Krishna. Vyasa had the name Krishna Dvaipayana, right? It was one of the names of sage Vyasa, because Krishna is a name that is, it was there even before the Dwapara Yuga. The sage Vyasa himself was born before Lord Krishna. Krishna literally means the dark one. But now when we take these names, when we say Rama and Krishna, we think of the avatars, Lord Rama and Krishna, isn't it? In the same way, though Gayatri means one of the chandas, now when we mention Gayatri, we think of the Gayatri mantra, right? So it is believed that when Krishna says, I am Gayatri, the reference is to this Gayatri mantra and to establish how important Gayatri is. Then Krishna goes on to say, Masanam, among the months, Margashirshaha aham. I am Margashirsha. Margashirsha, or Margari in the month in Tamil, is the month in the Hindu calendar that comes sometime in November, December, sometimes even spilling over to January, I guess. It is considered very auspicious, especially for taking up any form of worship. The Gopikas perform the Katyayani Vratam in this month, and that is what led them to have the experience of Rasalila. Rasalila itself is a very spiritual symbolism for Krishna accepting that prayer that they make during the Katyayani Vratam. He multiplies and dances with each one of the Gopikas. That again is a symbolism of Krishna giving himself away. So the Rasalila is a symbolic play which shows that Krishna accepted the Gopikas and Krishna gave himself to the Gopikas, right? And that was achieved by this special prayers they did during the Margashirsha. The Ekadashi that comes in the Margashirsha is considered to be the Vaikuntha Ekadashi, right? The most auspicious of the Ekadashis. So that month is considered very, very sacred in the Sanatana Dharma tradition. Another reason why that month is given that preference or that glory is, we've already seen the significance of Brahma Muhurta when we were going through the Dhyana Yoga segment. It is that golden hour just before dawn and is considered very auspicious for any spiritual activity, isn't it? We also saw the concept of time dilation in different lokas, how one day of Brahma has thousands of yugas and so on and so forth. In that we had mentioned, one day of the Devas or in Devaloka is considered one full human year. So when we look at it that way, the month of Margashirsha becomes the Brahma Muhurta for the day of the Devas. And that is why that entire month is considered like Brahma Muhurta. When you say that you have to do spiritual activities or spiritual sadhana during Brahma Muhurta, this entire month becomes a month of Brahma Muhurta. So any activity, spiritual activity that is taken up during this month is considered so auspicious, and no wonder, no surprise that Krishna is saying, Masanam Margashirishaha Aham. Among the months, I am Margashirsha. And the final point that Krishna makes in the shloka is, Ritunam, among the seasons, Kusumakaraha. I am the flowery season or spring. Kusuma means flowers, and Kusumakaraha means the season where the blossoms are abundant. A very beautiful name for spring, right? Which is otherwise called Vasanta Ritu. If you really observe your own mind carefully, right? If we just were to focus and see what the mood swings that happens, the patterns of thinking positive and negative thoughts, we will be able to clearly see that the mind is generally more bright and positive during the spring season. Of course, this effect is most stark in countries where you have harsh winters, right? Many times when listeners write to us from Scandinavian countries or places in Canada or Northern Europe, they will say that, oh, we've had a very tough winter and we're so much looking forward to spring. Because spring is a season of life and joy. That is why even in India, in northern parts, we have the celebrations of the Vasanta Panchami, a celebration of welcoming the spring season. Again, as we can see in all these examples, anything that thrills the heart, from music to spring, anything that is beneficial, from the ocean to the Gayatri Mantra, anything that strikes awe, from the element of fire to death, consider all of them as my vibhutis. If we recognize these as being divine manifestations, where is the question of not feeling the presence of God all around us? Where is even the question of being distant from Swami, isn't it? And that is why all these vibhutis are being mentioned. In fact, the secret is to see Him even in the unpleasant. That is something that Krishna will mention in the next shloka, which we will have to take up only next week. So, dear listeners, I'll conclude our journey of the Gita pilgrimage for this week. At this point, I most humbly offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet, and I thank each one of you for your beautiful company. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu for the next segment, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. As I said, I will be playing for you a satsang that we've done earlier as part of afternoon satsang. But I'm coming back again in the evening for the Thursday satsang, a talk that I had the opportunity to deliver online to the devotees in Australia, New Zealand and Fiji. That is going to be played for you as part of this week's Thursday satsang. Till I meet you all next week, keep safe, take care. Jai Sai Ram.